Hello and welcome. This is the Tech Reformation, where the world of technology meets the worldview of Christianity. I'm Derek.
I'm Craig.
And this is Tank.
We didn't talk about who's going to have stories.
And also, Ben's not here again this week.
Yeah, that's true.
I have one.
Go for it.
It's another car story. And this time it was Michelle's car. And it was one of those car stories where things just keep going wrong over and over and over again. But it was a lot of fun. So Michelle called me and her tire had blown out. And it was on the highway too. And so it's like, do I risk the rim exploding for her to get to an exit? Or do, I guess rims don't explode, but whatever happens to them.
Yeah.
Or right. Do I risk my body exploding by getting ran over by a speeding death machine? So thankfully there was some grass to the side of the highway. So I went ahead and changed it on the side of the highway.
Mm-hmm.
So she had to go to work, and I can work from home and stuff. So I just went to Robertson Tire in her car. We traded out. And then I went to my office, and she wanted to pick up her car again because she had to drive about an hour away. So she comes by, and we spend some time talking and hanging out and like, all right, you got to go. So she gets her car and I start walking back to the office. And then she yells, "You left the lights on." I'm like, ah. So her car doesn't ding whenever you leave the lights on and open the door.
Oh, yeah.
This is a very important feature. Because I've done this 3 or 4 times now. But thankfully, my car has jumper cables, and it was right there. So I pulled up in front of her, and we jumped it. And whenever I was doing the jumper cables, I was looking at it. I was like, okay. Is red positive or black positive? Which one is positive on this battery? Like, well, 50-50 chance. I hooked them up.
Oh my goodness.
Hooked up the other ones. Sparks. Very quickly removed it.
Derek is like an electrician, and he's holding his head in fear right now. Just
like... I mean, you're only going to do so much with a car battery, but man.
For future reference, red is positive, right?
Attach the red one to the red one and the black one to the black one.
Well, they weren't color coded, sadly, so I just had to wing it. Yeah,
that's rough.
But that's fun. I just said, like, what happened when Michelle and I first touched was the same thing that happened when our cars first touched. Sparks flew.
Oh,
that's pretty cheesy and corny and romantic all at the same time.
I like it.
So anyway, we got in our cars, and I started mine up, and then she started hers up. It was great, and we got out, and we were laughing at my fail on both the lights and the sparks as I wrapped up the jumper cables. And so I finally say goodbye again, get in the car, I turn on mine, and I hear her yell, "My car won't start." I say, "Your car won't start? What do you mean? It's on." And she goes, "No, I turned it off." And I heard a car running the whole time, but our cars were right next to each other. So I'd just been hearing my car running because apparently, for fear that I would be shocked, she turned her car off whenever I pulled the jumper cables off.
Oh, man.
So,
start again.
So, of course, the battery's more dead now because it used... I guess electricity to start.
Mm-hmm.
And so we hooked the battery back up, turned my car back on, and we have to sit there for like 10 minutes because we can't get it to start. We just let my car juice it up for a while.
Yep.
So an hour later, what was supposed to just be dropping off, trading cars, dropping off keys and saying goodbye, we finally successfully switched cars. So that was my exciting car story.
Oh, wow. You don't get a break with these, do you?
That's why I'm a member of the RAA.
Of the what?
The Royal Automobile Association. You call them and they come and fix stuff like that for you so that you don't have to. And you just pay a subscription.
Nice. Yeah, that's AAA for us in America.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Been thinking about getting us on that. Because we would have... used that subscription for us too. My car has an issue with battery draining too. It just has a weak battery, but mine also like it has a door trigger that doesn't always trigger open when you open the door, and the lights turn off when you open the door. So sometimes when you open the door and the door trigger doesn't go, then I leave the car with the lights on, and it only takes about a half hour for it to drain the battery. It's a really weak battery. But I swear, every single time that I have to jumpstart my car, I can never remember like the order that the wires go on. I mean, I know which wires go to which post, but you know which one's supposed to be connected to the metal of the car, and yeah, I don't know. It's confusing. You just go for it.
Yeah. I just go for it.
No fear. Just probably work.
Okay, yeah, that's right. We'll just see if this works. Guess it's the other way around.
This is Tech You Should Know, the part of the show where we bring you 7 tech topics from throughout the past week that we feel are worth your consideration. First up, Amazon pledges to bring device encryption back to Fire OS this spring. I know we had a conversation in the Slack about this. Amazon has quickly reversed course after it found itself in a PR firestorm earlier this week for quietly disabling encryption in its Fire OS 5 software. The decision to remove decryption was not in response to the current FBI v. Apple case, and was rather a decision made late last fall, but it was made to be such a big deal this past week in tech media that in a statement provided to The Verge, a representative from Amazon has said they will return the option for full disk encryption with a Fire OS update coming this spring. Mac owners get their first taste of ransomware as KeyRanger infects a transmission update. OS X users have been hit with the first known case of Mac ransomware malware found in the transmission BitTorrent client that was released a couple weeks ago. Infected versions of the app include KeyRanger malware that will maliciously encrypt the user's hard drive after 3 days of it being installed. The malware then asks for payment to allow the user to decrypt the disk and access their data, which is the ransom.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Does anyone here use transmission? Well, you don't, Tank, but Craig, do you use transmission at all? Did you have to worry about this?
No, it's the first I've heard of it, so it hasn't affected me.
Okay.
As far as I know.
It scared me a bit just because I do use transmission, but I didn't have it open when it had this faulty software update go out. I don't use it for anything illegal. I have like, I think I feel like I should put that defense out there right away. I'm on a Christian podcast about technology, just torrenting things.
Using BitTorrents.
Yeah.
Was it did random people get it, or did you have to download it from some shady site to get it, or how did some people get ransomware and some didn't?
So what actually happened was the transmission servers themselves were hacked and had a hacked file go up to their servers so that it used either the same security certificate that allows it to run on Macs, it was on transmission side that got hacked. And so when everyone installed the update, they installed a piece of malware. It was quite tricksy. Google's Project Fi mobile network is now open to everyone in the U.S. 10 months after Google unveiled its own mobile network, Project Fi, which lets consumers pay only for the amount of data they use each month, the company is opening up access to everyone inside the United States. Of course, when they say everyone, they of course only mean everyone who owns one of Google's Nexus phones. Microsoft is bringing its database software to Linux. Microsoft's popular database software... Okay, how do you pronounce that? SQL or SQL?
SQL.
SQL. Okay.
SQL. A few different ways of saying it.
Yeah, so Microsoft's SQL server is coming to Linux and will be available sometime next year. This is the first time that Microsoft has let SQL Server run on a platform other than Windows. It's a notable shift that means Microsoft is now prioritizing the sale of its database software over the sale of the operating system running beneath it. While that may mean fewer sales of Windows, it speaks to Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella's services-first approach.
What? Bill Gates isn't the CEO of Microsoft?
No, not for like the past 8 years or so.
Okay, I missed that. That shows how much attention I've paid to Microsoft in the last 8 years or so.
Yeah, you missed the whole, what's his name? Monkey Boy. Ballmer. You missed the whole Steve Ballmer era of CEO.
I don't even know who he is, but I know that Steve Jobs is a pretty good CEO. It's good that he's still, you know, in control of where Apple's going. No?
Yeah. Okay, moving on. Square launches its mobile payment service in Australia.
Yay!
Yeah, some Australia love in here. It's been almost 3 years since Square expanded its mobile payment service into a new country. It most recently hit Japan, its first foray outside of North America, in May 2013. But this week, it went down under with a long-awaited launch in Australia. It's still not clear whether this launch will usher further expansions from Square. The company still hasn't entered the UK or Germany, to name just two markets that could be on its radar.
I remember that you, when we were setting up the podcast originally, you wanted me to transfer money via Square, and we're all quite surprised that it didn't exist in Australia. So good to know that they've finally swung it around and pushed it out here.
Yeah, exactly. Google surprises everyone with an early preview of Android N. Google unexpectedly dropped the Android N developer preview this week. The expectation was that Google wouldn't start even talking about Android N until its I/O developer conference in May. But it decided on a different approach to give developers more time to learn the new OS and give feedback on it. Google stresses that this preview of N is very much still a work in progress, but some new features are already apparent, like improvements to the Doze feature and improved Java 8 language support, and features that iOS has already, such as direct reply notifications, split screen view, and picture-in-picture mode.
What's Android N? Is it just the new edition of the operating system?
Yeah, so they code everything in desserts. But they haven't given this one an official name yet, but they go through the alphabet. So the last one was Marshmallow, and this one's...
Yeah. Not Sunday.
Right. Or Nutella. People are speculating Nutella, but we don't do rumors on this show.
You know it's Nutella, right? Like, Nutty buddy. Not Nutella.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it's got hazelnuts in it.
Oh.
They're not hazelnuts.
The FBI versus Apple case has started to turn openly hostile. This has,
as we all figured it would.
Well, it's starting to get downright catty. So we've heard several arguments from either side over the past few weeks about why or why not forcing Apple to unlock iPhones for law enforcement is a good thing. But now the FBI has apparently turned to threats and whining. Mentioned in the motion that was filed, the FBI said things like, Apple's rhetoric is not only false, but also corrosive of the very institutions that are best able to safeguard our liberty and our rights. Bruce Sewell, Apple's general counsel and SVP of legal, has responded with accusations that the FBI is intentionally trying to smear Apple with false accusations and innuendo, and that it's an effort to vilify Apple rather than confront the issues in the case. It seems to me this will soon devolve into yaha and nah-uh and become an all-out slap fight. and as this just came out actually today, well, I'm talking Friday, but the FBI is threatening to have Apple to have Apple turn over all the iOS source code and signing documents too, which is just insane that the government could, like, that would give the government to essentially create their own version of iOS that is indistinguishable from Apple's that they could do whatever with. That's just crazy craziness to me. Some people.
I think it's, you know, it's not surprising. It's a bit of a shame, I guess, if it does get to that stage where it's like, you know,
yeah,
yes, we did, no, you didn't, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's going to come back to who do people Who do people want to side with? Do they want to side with Apple for their own privacy, or do they want to side with the FBI for national security and mm-hmm. or state security or whatever? Like, you know, it's the ultimate question it's always going to end up as. So mm-hmm. it's not surprising there'll be a bit of cattiness, I guess, between the two opposing views. It's just a shame that we all have to listen to it.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, that concludes Tech You Should Know for this week. Tech You Should Use this week, I will be talking about scanners.
That's right, it's 1994.
1957, actually.
That's when they first invented, was it? I'm talking about like when they got into homes.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Like, it was probably later than 94, actually, because 94 was like the 386 era. I don't think there would have been many people with scanners in that sort of time. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
So, why scanners, you ask? Well, I have a paperless system that I have on my computer. I have it all set up. So I need a decent scanner in order to scan, you know, important documents into my computer, store them, encrypt them, whatever.
So it's not really paperless then. It ends up paperless.
It ends up
paperless. But it's not entirely paperless.
Right. Well, it is a system that works towards being paperless. But unfortunately, people keep trying to give me paper, and so I have to deal with it. So
I just had a picture of, you know that meme where it's shut up and take my money? I had a picture of shut up and take my paper.
Nice.
I might meme that and put it in the Slack channel. Anyway, keep going.
So for those of you out there with this issue, I present to you the Fujitsu ScanSnap scanners. These are not terribly cheap, but boy, do they work and do they work well. These are both for Windows and Mac computers. There are three models I'll talk about today. They have some other like ones out on the fringes, but these are like their main ones. I actually have let me check here. I think I have the ScanSnap S13i.
This is the part of the show where we're as confused as the people listening as to what Derek's actually doing at this point.
So the one I'll talk about first is the ScanSnap S1300i, which I have an older variant of that, which without the i. But it's a smaller desktop scanner. It opens up. It feeds stuff through. The great thing about these is that they really don't have any issues jamming. They don't have any issues connecting to your computer. They have software that actually works well. And you can set it up so that with different profiles, so that you know, you can select a profile, you press the button, it scans stuff through, and it either puts it in certain folders, or it names them in a certain way, or, you know, that kind of That's thing. Cool. You can also hook it up to services like Evernote, I think, in order to scan directly to them.
Nice.
And the S1300i is a wired scanner, but they also have the ScanSnap iX500 and the iX100. The 500 is like their big scanner, like for industrial documents. No, it's not industrial document scanning, but it's for a serious power user at home that needs something on their desk all the time. They need to eat through 200 pages in about 3 minutes, you know, that kind of thing. And that one is actually wireless, and I've heard it works very well. I can't speak specifically to that, but the thing is with these scanners is they work well and they work long, and I can't upgrade to a new one because mine never breaks. with printers, like every other year, you're gonna replace a printer probably if you use it any decent amount of time. But yeah, these just work really well. I've been very impressed with them. And if you're currently using a printer scanner on a regular basis, please look into getting one of these, because
that's me.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I can see. I really like the concept of the profiles that you mentioned. It's nice being able to say, go to this folder and name yourself water bill on this date or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it hooks in. So I have mine automatically funnel into a particular folder And it does the OCR scanning, or the OCR detection, which means it picks out all the words and puts that in a layer under it so that it's searchable. So then my automated filing system kicks in then and sees what if there's certain documents that I have in there. It just pulls them out, names them, files them in whatever drawer they go to. And oh, it's a beautiful thing. It's an essential part of a paperless workflow. So
that was a different tech you should use, right? When you talked about that
system. Yeah, that would be Hazel. So go
Hazel.
Go to our website, techreformation.com, and look up those beautiful tags that Craig has worked so hard on.
And that was quite early on, I think. That was like episode 4 or something, 4 or 5.
It was a while ago.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It seems quite early. It was one of the early ones. Maybe it wasn't quite that early. But yeah, anyway. Cool.
So that's what I have for Tech You Should Use this week.
Great, so let's get into theology from the headlines. I'm bringing it this week, I suppose.
Bring it!
And bringing it to the... Never mind. I'll never be an MC or a DJ.
This is what happens when white guys try to be cool.
Let me put on my sunglasses real quick and I'll be alright. Anyway, so theology from the headlines. I was inspired this week by a video I watched of David Platt. And if you know much about David Platt, he wrote that book called Radical a while ago. And
I have that
he
book.
Is now, yeah, it's a good one. He's now the president of the Southern Baptist International Mission Board. And he's done quite a few things that some might consider radical. Wink, wink. I feel like a news reporter now. I'm from DJ to news reporter. Anyway. Okay, so David Platt, IMB. He realized that there was a deficit. They knew this, and they've never gone in debt, but each year they were spending more than they were taking in. And so his first step was to reduce that. And they as a group didn't force any missionaries off the field, but quite a few came back just through some of the programs they implemented, like a voluntary early retirement incentive.
Mm-hmm.
And so now they're looking to how can we get not just 100 or 200 missionaries back? They lost about 500. But how can we get thousands of missionaries back? So I watched this video and was just really inspired by a lot of what the stuff that they're talking about, as well as the mission conference I went to last week. And it's really been kind of having a change on how I view missions. And so I was interested in talking to you guys today about basically just tech and missions. And so I just want to start with one question just to see what your all's take on it, if it's similar to mine. What kind of profession would you all expect a cross-cultural missionary to have? You, or what do you think the general church populace expects? So like, what would their college degree be, or what would they be doing over there? Just kind of what would be the general job description you would see?
Is there a right and wrong answer? It doesn't seem like a question that, like... are you saying, like, what would be other people's expectations, or what do we think is the norm? Or?
Yeah, kind of both. What do you guys kind of just expect? This question is more of a, like, it's not really a discussion question, but I'm curious to see if you, I have a mindset in my head that I've always thought, and I'm curious to see if you all have the same one.
Okay. I guess I'll start. Because Derek was sipping on his drink again, so I'm never 100% sure when he's ready to talk. But always think missionaries need to be able to do something useful. And this isn't, I think the more I go through life, the more I have rethought this. But I always thought a good missionary would be someone like a doctor or a teacher or someone who can, you know, they either have to be good with healthcare or good with children. That's kind of how I
that's a good
used
stereotype.
To think about.
Yeah.
Yeah, I used to think about the professions of missionaries. And I think some of that has changed, obviously, as I've got older and met more people who are actually missionaries, and some of them are just regular people like me who've done a whole range of different careers or whatever. Like, they don't fit into a particular category. So yeah, I don't really know. Although I do think that those two things are still things that can be really useful in, especially in countries that are less fortunate than us. I do know of a mission organization run by a guy and his wife. He went to high school with my older sister, and he is a doctor. And I think his wife is a nurse or whatever. She runs the clinic anyway. They basically set up a clinic in Uganda, in Africa. And then I have a family member who set up a school in Uganda. So I guess those two stereotypes aren't just stereotypes, at least in my experience.
Historically, I don't think I've ever really thought about the job that a missionary holds while they're out on a missions field. Mm-hmm. It's always been like a secondary thought, like, they go to seminary, they learn the language, blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah. I guess they preach. And I just figured it was more of like a full-time pastor role as opposed to like actually holding down a job or a career type of thing. That's mm-hmm. changed in my mind over the past few years, especially after doing some short-term missions trips, especially one of our missionaries out in Burkina Faso. The dude's an engineer, and he's a brilliant man, and he's been essentially getting this village of Mahadaga to start some kind of industry in Burkina Faso, which is an incredibly poor place. Like he's really trying to juice the economy there by getting people into like water projects, digging wells, et cetera, like just doing things instead of farming the exact same thing as their neighbors and, you know, trying to get people to innovate. So, but yeah, anyway, little rabbit trail. But.
Yeah, it's perfect. Yeah, so that's kind of, those are exactly what I've always pictured. And I think that's what a lot of missions is currently. And that's not a bad thing. Like, there's kind of the full-time pastors that Derek mentioned who go to seminary, or they have a linguistic degree or an anthropology degree. And so when they go on missions full-time, they're working with the church. They're hopefully planting churches. Like Derek said, learning the language, discipling nationals, all those are extremely important jobs, and they're still being done and need to be done. And then there's kind of the other side that Craig mentioned that is a bit more, I guess, socially geared, like the engineer and the teacher and the doctors, where you go and you serve a community by providing healthcare in a way that that community can't provide itself. But all of these jobs, really they require this financial backing somewhere, whether from the organization that they're going with or churches back home, really, because just the nature of the job, they're not making any of their own money. And so they cost a lot to keep on the field. They're always flying back and forth, going home and stuff. And so basically what David Platt's, vision is for the IMB. He still definitely wants to send those fully funded church planner type people. But he wants kind of the main thrust just to send almost a flood of people in, as much are willing, to cities like Shanghai and Dubai, India, just the big global cities of the world, because they're cities that are just like any first world, in air quotes, country, you know, like mm-hmm. Shanghai is just as high tech as most American cities, I would bet. And so really, you can get any tech job over there, you can get any lawyer job over there, you can get any doctor job over there. They have all the same facilities and all the same needs that any given city would want. The only difference is you're surrounded by millions of lost people, instead of being surrounded by a bunch of, probably still a bunch of lost people here, but these people, the difference is these lost people have a really hard time finding a church to go to because there's mm-hmm. like two. So that's kind of his vision, is to get professionals, just people like, okay, you're a lawyer, great. why not just do it in a different country? And what's the big deal? So what do you guys think of that vision? That's kind of the main thrust that I wanted to talk about. I wanted to hear what you guys thought.
Yeah, what's the big deal? Just pull up all your roots and you know, go over and into a different culture and society completely, different language. Not a big deal.
Hey, Derek, whoever doesn't hate mother or father or brother or family or...
Oh, well, yeah, no, I agree. I was amused at how Tank ended up putting it. Just
yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, no, I agree too. I'm just being Jesus drinking the situation.
Yes, yes, as a proper Christian should.
In terms of what you're saying there, Tank. So I think what you're like, correct me if I'm wrong, but just to clarify, you're sort of saying that there's been a bit of a shift in recent times where it's not about a particular job. You can pretty much go and do any job. Because all of those jobs exist overseas in a lot of places, just like they exist here. I think that that's true. And I think for big cities in particular, places like Tokyo and Shanghai and whatever, that makes a lot of sense. I think the difficulty is when it comes to like more remote areas. So, so I guess I'm thinking, again, like... from personal experience, it's easiest for me to talk that way rather than hypothetically. I think if you're going to a big city, then yeah, I can't see any reason why you wouldn't just get whatever job you have in America or Australia, wherever you're from, and try and seek to do the same job over there, because it means you don't have to re-skill, and it means you can, like we said last week, you can be a regular member of society and not just someone who looks like they're freeloading off a church back in their home country. But I also think... when I went on a short-term trip to the Philippines in 2011, we were based in a city called Cebu. But so big city, lots of, you know, fancy hotels and high-rise buildings. And then you'd be 5 minutes out of the city on the main road and there'd be slums right next to the fancy hotels. And we weren't working in the center of the city. We were working 45 minutes out of the city in the suburbs and in the slum districts and stuff. So, I think there was a different need in terms of occupation. The occupation there for the people who were running the mission organization that we worked with was completely different. If they'd just been a lawyer or something living in a little village, essentially, it wouldn't have been super useful. So the people who were running that ended up, basically the person at the top was kind of like their role was like an administrator or an organizer who also had pastoral qualities. So she would pull people together and she had they had a church going, they had a school going, they had a medical clinic, particularly for pregnant women from the slums and stuff like that. They had a feeding program for people. So I think there's those kinds of things that can't necessarily be done in big cities that are like I think the practical social stuff is sometimes removed from big cities. I think big cities are often places where there is a bit more wealth and prosperity and because there's industry and commerce and stuff happening. And so in those, if that's where you're called to, then that's cool. And you can have whatever job you already have. Mm-hmm. But if you're called to somewhere more remote, then that's when I think sometimes it becomes more, that you have to take on different roles to serve the needs of the particular community.
Yeah, I totally agree. And what I kind of mentioned was that they're not going to stop sending those kind of people. And there are definitely people who will be called to do that. And so the goal, though, is to inspire and encourage to have so much more light, I guess, go to that area. Mm-hmm. Like the people going, they may not be full time, but I mean, anytime, what's the difference between one candle or like a cigarette lighter compared to a spotlight, you know? And whenever you sit, or I guess that's not the best picture, one candle compared to 1,000 candles, you know, there's so much more light is going to fill the room. And so that's kind of the context. Like, we are in a country that already has millions of candles. And so we still need to send the people who are going to be focused on those really hard to reach places. but why not also just so the IMB kind of wants to be a facilitator to do all the hard stuff, like help you get a visa, help you find a job, help you get connected to a church there, all that stuff. And so you can just go, just say, yeah, I want to go work in the city. And mm-hmm. then all you have to do is go. And now you have a job and you can be working, you can be doing your skill. And what's really incredible is like these big cities, the people groups of the world are flocking there. So, you know, it's not these hard to reach places. Well, they may be in the Middle East where nobody can go. Even I guess you could still go if you're a teacher or software developer, or whatever, but it's going to be hard to get a visa there. But if you get a visa to go work in Shanghai, well, you can find these people groups and they're not protected by their government. They're just there, you know. And of course, Dubai, India, that's the place with the most unreached. India has the most unreached people group in the most concentrated area. So
you mean Mumbai, India? Dubai is in.
Mumbai and Dubai are both cities that they're targeting. So whichever one's
Dubai
is
not in India.
Sorry.
That's all right.
So Mumbai, then, yeah. So if you go there, like that has the most concentrated. Different kinds of people groups in the world that you're going to be sitting next to in your office, you know. So
you're talking about volume being more important than vocation.
The vocations are important, but increasing the volume for free, basically.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah. So the vocation is just a means to being able to increase volume because you can go and know that you've already got a job mm-hmm. and therefore it's easier for more people to go because they don't have to worry about raising 100% support and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's an incredibly efficient way of going about it, seems to me. Mm-hmm. Just getting people there that know Christ and are willing to talk about him and I think it's brilliant.
So yeah, I think that's something that for my long-term future that I've definitely been considering. Because you just have a platform of respect, like you're giving back to the community, you're working side by side with people. Like there's just kind of like, you know, the team mentality that you have more respect than a pastor going over there and hanging out at a coffee shop all day and wants to always talk about religion. Like, who's this weird guy that's richer than me and I never see work? You know, I think just for all of us and our listeners, if this is something that you never thought of a missionary doing, like you have a job or maybe you don't have a job and can't find one because America has a hard time finding jobs sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like maybe God is using this to say, hey, you can find a job overseas and be and shine your light in this country where all these people need Jesus. And my name is not being glorified, and you can go and proclaim my greatness to these people who are enslaved. And I just think that's an awesome opportunity, and I really hope that like that this continues, and in the future the volume of missionary is just professionals that mm-hmm. are. I don't know. I think it's incredible.
Yeah, and for those of you who aren't, I don't know if this has been clarified that this is something that you are doing. Tank, that for those of you who may have either glossed over it in previous episodes or are joining us for the first time, this is something that Tank is planning on going to do, and I think it's cool. We still haven't found a location yet, right? Or
yeah,
for sure,
correct.
Right? Mm-hmm. But
yeah, but I would be more of a right now. I would be more of that full time church planner, disciple, or evangelist type person as opposed to just. Getting a job and working.
Oh, okay.
So most of my time will be learning language. Kind of wrap up this section. What the IMB is doing is they're calling it the Global City Initiative, and they want to send students who can go paid for by scholarships and whatnot. They want to send professionals who can get jobs, and they want to send retirees because these cities are saying, come retire here. Because we make this city awesome for you. Like they're rolling out the red carpet for retirees trying to get people. So it's like, you can go live it up in this city. The government's paying you Social Security money and you can share the gospel.
That's pretty rad.
And they're Yeah, they're going to have team leaders that are, like, their job is to find places for people to be, essentially take care of all the logistics and then connect you with a team in that city. So while you're there working or while you're there being retired, you are connected with all the other people who have that mission mindset as well. So very cool program, and I look forward to seeing how it develops. I'm just curious, what do you guys have any visions or ideas that you could see tech being used in on the mission field, or like whether developed from here or whatever? And just one example is one missionary I was talking to recently. He developed a Bible app in a language that is a very unreached people group. And it's a phone app, and if they download it, they read it in their own language, and if they read 5 chapters, a pop-up says, "Hey, do you want this free picture?" And it's like a picture of some verse, like it's a verse and a picture. And if they say yes, they get in contact with that person, and they say, like, if you want to talk any more about what you've been reading, then great. And so they are living in Thailand, a safe country, like letting them do that, and still reaching this lost people group that is in the Middle East through that method. Have you ever like had any dreams of ways we could use tech to serve people groups from wherever we are?
I've got an idea, and I want you guys to tell me how feasible you think it is. Because I totally support the idea of what you said, Tank, like going, immersing yourself in a culture and learning the language as a top priority, because learning language is one of the key ways that you can actually have better interactions with people, clearly. But also to learn a language is not that easy. And so it shows the people that you're invested in what you're doing. But I wonder if something that could help people out in like while they're going through that process, because from what I've heard, that can take like up to 3 years or whatever to learn a language to the point where you can be relatively fluent. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder if there would be some kind of app that could be developed for phones that was like almost like a dictation and translation at the same time, so that you could speak something in your language and have it and then select a language for it to, like, before you start using it, select a language that for the country that you're in, which could include remote like people groups and stuff as well, I guess, over time, and then say something into your phone and it reads it out to them in their language translated live on the spot, and then they could speak into your phone and it translates it back the other way. Does that exist?
I'm almost certain that exists.
I think that's pretty cool.
Cool.
I think it does. I've seen someone say that. I've seen it demonstrated before. But yes, I'm almost certain that exists. I bet if you I'm just Googling on the fly to try to find something, but so I couldn't say for sure the reliability of these, but looks like there's an app called iTranslate. Speak and Translate.
Speak and Translate's one I just saw that looks like the same sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. It's already there. There you go. That's my idea.
Yeah. Sweet.
That's cool.
So it's not very original. Sorry about that.
Oh, no. It's, I mean,
still good, though. I've never even thought of that.
3 years ago, that would have blown people's minds like crazy. Yeah.
That's right. I was just going to say, Speak and Translate was only released. Well, it says 17th of December 2015 was the latest update. So I don't know how many versions in they are, but
yeah, yeah.
Anyway, looks like it's been there since 2014.
Yeah. So it's an interesting question you ask, Tank, because it's almost like when you realize someone speaks another language and you ask them, "Oh, say something in that language." It's like they can't do it because
yeah.
It's like, well, I need something to talk about. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like unless there's a problem to solve, I can't quite figure out really what I want to say to that.
Mm-hmm. But that's completely fair. But I guess the reason I wanted to ask is so like we as a group collectively, the us and the listeners, you know, we kind of start thinking that way. Like we have God-given gifts and talents that we can use for his glory. And just what can we do? You know, if I were a videographer, maybe I could research a people group that's unreached and make some video just giving information and trying to inspire people to go reach them. I'm a developer, so I could help make one of those Bible apps or something, you know. Just, I think these are questions. I guess it's just kind of what my mind's being blown by recently is God has given me a skill. I'm a really good developer. And when I tell people that I'm going to give up my developing, they're like, man, that's so weird. Like, you could do so much with it. You probably go work for Google and whatnot, but you're going to go overseas and be a church planner. And I get use that as an opportunity to tell them how amazing my God is and why he's totally worth it. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like the realization that I can use my skill, one, to get over in that country and be, I have a platform and a level of respect from the people, or I could use my skill to really impact world missions in another way. It's just something I had never thought about before. And so I guess I'm hoping to get people thinking that way. You know, what can I do to be a part of God's global mission for the world using what I do every day? And I don't have to have that just as what I do to make money and waste 8 hours so that I can be part of God's kingdom the rest of the day. I can use this skill day in, day out for his glory. And of course, we use it for his glory just by making stuff and serving him well. Yeah. I don't mean to discount just the fact of how work glorifies God, but
right.
Being a part of his global mission is specifically what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that is like 50 years ago, that question wouldn't have been, or that thought pattern wouldn't quite be as effective or quite as interesting because of the result of globalization that has resulted from the pervasiveness and advancement of tech.
Mm-hmm.
Because the world is so much smaller now, we really can impact a lot of people with, you know, jobs in tech and things you do on the internet. We are a result of that to some extent.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, I'm pretty sure we have someone listening in Canada. So, I mean, we're all over the globe, baby.
International podcast.
That's right.
It's like right next door to America, but anyway.
Yeah, no, it was
still cool.
No, we've got like tons of Australian listeners and stuff too. That's it's cool.
No, that's good. I think something else I would say as well is, and this isn't a tech-specific thing, although I think what you mentioned, Tank, is really interesting. Like, I used to work in videography more than I do at the moment, but it's kind of where my background is. And it did come across a group at one point that was working for a big missions organization, essentially doing just that, making actual narrative short films, but then in the language of the countries that they were working in. So they would have actors, but then they would overdub it with voices from the appropriate place. And there would be messages kind of in the video without it being a super, you know, cheesy Christian film type thing. So that's kind of cool. I think something that with missions in general, something that has changed the way I think about missions was just, I used to always think that, I don't feel called to be a missionary. You know, it's only for certain people. And then, you know, you shouldn't really be a missionary unless you really feel a calling to it, because you'll just, you know, cause problems, or you won't be following God's will for your life or whatever. I don't know. Probably had some terrible theology about how to discern whether or not God was calling you to missions. And at the same time, I think I was kind of like, and short-term missions is just silly because it just creates extra work for the people that you're working with, because they have to host you and give you a program and or whatever if you know. So I kind of had issues with that, or just thought that it wasn't necessarily the smartest way to go about it. Until I went on a short-term mission trip, and kind of thought, you know, I need to at least experience what this is like, and open myself up to the possibility that God could be calling me to this. And then we actually, like, we were asked to speak at our church when we got back about our experience. And I just remember saying, I still don't know if I feel, if I am called to full-time missionary work overseas. But now that I've been and seen and met the people and heard their stories, I cannot rule out any longer the possibility that I could easily be called to this at some point, if not now. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So I didn't come back and go, that's it. I need to, you know, God's calling me to that country that I just visited. But I did come back and go, God could well be calling me to that country or any other country, and I better be ready for it. So that was something that kind of made like a mental shift for me. And I think I've seen that in some other Christians as well, just in the way that we approach the whole topic of missions, that we're kind of from a slightly broader perspective, and not, this isn't tech specific, obviously, but I think that's something that I would just highlight to people, is that if you've never had anything to do with missions or never really considered it something that you're supposed to do or whatever, I don't know, maybe you think that the Great Commission is just a local thing for you, maybe try a short-term mission and just kind of see what it's like, meet some people who are in need of the gospel and in need of God's love in a situation where they don't get that message, they don't get the truth of scripture presented to them normally, and then allow yourself to be open to that, to the fact that God might be calling you to that situation. That would be some advice that I would give, I think.
That's great. I like that. My first short-term mission trip blew my mind. Going to a different culture and seeing the need of Christ and seeing what God does there.
Yeah.
I think on the topic of being called, you know, with 2-point-something billion people in cultures where less than 1% of the people believe in Christ, you know, so there's pretty much, they can go their entire life never hearing the gospel. With 2 billion people in cultures like that, like, sure, not everybody's called, but man, I just feel like a lot more are. And on that, like, and secondly, maybe not everybody's called to be in that culture, but everybody is called to short-term, or everybody is called to cross-cultural missions in some way. Like, the people groups of the world remaining to be reached is, just in my mind, just a huge priority for Christians. And worship is why we exist, but I believe the Great Commission is like our mission statement. And so, man, if you've never really thought about missions, cross-cultural missions in general, look up Joshua Project. That'll be in the show notes. And just start getting an idea of what people groups are, what it means for them to be unreached or unengaged, and then consider how can you be a part, whether with your job or by going or praying or any of that.
Where are we up to, Recos?
We are. Craig, what's your Reco this week?
My Reco this week is a podcast episode again. I think I did this last time as well. I'm going to Reco an episode from Apology Radio number 159. It's called Batman versus Sanders and Foolish Atheists. I love Apology Radio. Sometimes I don't 100% agree with some of the stuff in terms of theonomy and whatever, but love where they're coming from in general, and their podcast is what kind of got me started into my journey into Reformed theology. And so the latest episode is just, I was actually just listening to it in the car, and it was just making me laugh so hard at some of the stuff they were playing from Lawrence Krauss and just the precept they were doing on his argumentation and stuff. It was just amazing. It wasn't anything unusual to what they normally do when they talk about atheism, but they're just very good at pointing out the flaws in that system and pointing to the truth of scripture. So definitely check out Apology Radio and that episode specifically.
All right. Yeah, they're very good at satire.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just, I mean, it's always a fun, it generally is always a fun podcast to listen to.
Yeah.
But like my wife was in the car with me and she's not a big podcast person. And she was just openly laughing about it as well. That it wasn't so much because you were laughing at him, but it was just the strength of the biblical worldview was satisfying. Do you know what I mean? Not just from an intellectual perspective, but it was just like, yeah, that it makes so much sense. And the opposite doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it was very cool.
Yeah. I'm going to recommend the TV show Gotham this week. Tanya and I have been watching through it the past week or two, and we've been really enjoying it. I remember hearing some people have like issues with Gotham, that it wasn't terribly good the first season. I don't know what they're talking about. I'm really enjoying it. I'm also not a comic book fan, or like I don't read comic books religiously or like watch all the superhero movies, so maybe there's something I'm missing, but I absolutely love the detective genre that Gotham is presenting, and I really like it.
Nice. Yeah, my parents keep telling me I should watch it. I probably will eventually. And I'm going to reco virtual desktops. I don't know about Mac and Linux, but Windows 10, I just discovered virtual desktops. And basically, you can get clean desktops. So you can make as many as you want. And it's hard to describe, but it's pretty much just like you have one desktop, you open Chrome, you open up your email or whatever, and you say, okay, I want another desktop. And it's empty. And you can open up another Chrome, and you can open up Spotify. So what I use it for, one now has my project board for my software stuff and my source control for my project for my software stuff. And then my other virtual desktop has all my code stuff. So I go code and have my full desktop for all my code. And then I'm like, okay, I need to look at a new task or check in my code. And I just switch desktops and all that stuff is full screen. So instead of having all these tiny windows everywhere, I get to maximize and make the full use of my space and just one keyboard shortcut, and I'm switched rather than minimizing all my stuff and trying to find it and trying to reorganize it. So yeah, look into your favorite OS and see if it has virtual desktops, because it's changing the way I use my computer. So
yeah, it's very nice. If you would like to contact us, you can join us in our Slack channel at slack.techreformation.com. You can sign up there. We'll send you an email and you can hop right on in and talk to some of the rest of the fan base and with us about just whatever you want to talk about. Pick your favorite channel. Talk about it in the, talk about what we're talking about here in the evangelism channel, or, I don't know, we've got a film TV channel. We also have our friends Calvinist Batman and The Rugged Marriage over there, so check that out. We love talking to you guys. It really is a blessing to be able to talk to so many of the people who listen to us and know that you guys enjoy what we're doing. It's really flattering, and this wouldn't be near as much fun without you people who are listening. You can also check us out on our Twitter and Facebook. That's at Tech Reformation and facebook.com/TechReformation.
And we have a website. Derek mentioned it earlier. It's techreformation.com. You can head there for latest episodes, or you can get them in your podcast catcher. The benefit of the website is that there are tags for each episode. So if you're looking for a particular topic, go and check that out and find what you're looking for, hopefully. And if you don't find it, let us know and we'll try and do an episode on it.
Lastly, you can email us at ask@techreformation.com. Questions, feedback, comments, whatever. We'd love to hear it.
Yeah, and suggestions for future shows. Like Craig said, drop that in an email and send it to us. That'd be great. You can review us on iTunes and recommend us on Overcast. If you're reviewing us on iTunes, you just go to your podcast app on your iPhone. Or if you're running an Android, download iTunes on your computer and review us there. Music is reused by special permission of Matthew Parker. You can check him out on SoundCloud and iTunes, and the links to the show notes. This has been Tech Reformation. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
when you said your phone went ding and you turned around to reach for something, I thought you were going to reach for your phone. I was surprised when you had a rabbit.
No, that was actually a cow, but yeah, anyway.
Oh, a cow.
Yeah, it's like a white cow pencil case.
They have cows in Australia?
Yes. We have everything in Australia. It's just that most of it wants to kill you.
Kill it, cows.
Cows are some of the few animals that you can just kind of go, oh yeah, it's a cow. It's and sheep are the same. Like, oh, that's all right. Not dangerous at all.